Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, my friends, once again to another Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 61, and this is for September the 2nd, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help guide you through this magical maze of network wires, fiber optics, switches, routers, firewalls, all things connected and all kind of server goodness right here on Tips from the Server Room. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great technology podcasts. You can find those at techpodcast.com. Also, folks, if you have a minute, or even if you don't have a minute, you know what? I think you owe it to yourself to go check out my website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows. You can also call in and leave us a voice message. And, you know, millions of you have. Nope, none of you have. Does nobody have a phone nowadays? I think maybe that's it. Maybe nobody has a phone anymore. We all text. If I said you can text me at this number, I'd probably get 1,000 texts every week. But, folks, pick up that phone. Call in. You know, it's not like you're not pledging any money or anything. You're just calling in saying, hey, Jack, this is, you know, Joe, I have a question. You can do that at 724-701-0550. Don't forget, we're still planning on it, and I don't know because it looks like WebEx has raised their prices. I don't know if I was at the wrong site or what the other day, but it's astronomically expensive now. It's like $50 a month. But I'm still planning on having my live Windows Server class. Matter of fact, I just provisioned a new server, a new Windows 2012 R2 server. It's cranked up and ready to go for the class. Class is going to be 6 weeks, and I'm still going to drill a little bit more details. But I do know that we're going to have one class each week, and each class will be about 2 hours long. You know, you're going to be required to be there. It's just like going to any other class. You can't skip school and you can't cut the class. You're supposed to be there and hang out with me for a couple hours. You're going to be able to raise your hand, ask questions, maybe even call in, and we can discuss things. I think it's going to be very interactive, and I'm still trying to work out the details. I'm still trying to figure out about that WebEx thing. I don't understand. Maybe I was on the wrong site, because you know how many different sites like that Cisco owns. There's a lot of them. But anyway, I'm trying to drill that down, trying to figure out the cost per student. If you have any questions or future ideas for future shows, future topics, you can send those to me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter as at Technoman. Many of you have, and you've noticed that I don't bombard you. I'm not like those Twitter people that, you know, want to tweet messages all day long, like, well, having my morning Starbucks with my trusty laptop, working on my iPad on my server. Nah, I don't do that. You know, if I have something important to say, I'll throw it out there. But most of all, if these shows go live, it gets knocked out there onto Twitter land. And it also goes live when I post it on the blog. So when I put a new show up each week, you'll know about it right away. So it's really, really important to be a follower on Twitter. And that's at Technoman. All right. So I thought I would open tonight's show. Tonight's show is really, really packed. I think I filled it too full. And I don't think I'll complete the whole segment that I want to do tonight. So I'll probably have to push it into next week. And we'll have to deal with it next week a little bit. But I'm taking right now some advanced networking classes, and there's a lot of reasoning for that. You know, because I said you can never learn too much, and you can never know it all, right? So we have to keep our skills up, and we have to keep learning. So I wanted to bring some of this advanced networking class to you folks on the podcast. I think it would be a great way to bring you into my learning environment, more or less. But tonight we're going to start talking, first of all, with an email response I did get. And it's funny because when you're a podcaster, you generally get emails from other podcasters. And I don't know why that is. I got a lot of people listening. I mean, this show is rounding the bend. There's many of you out there listening to it. I know it's getting downloaded tons, and I really appreciate all the efforts and people pulling down the show and listening to me on your way to work. I hope I'm not putting you to sleep. Wake up. Watch the car in front of you. Watch the car behind you. You know, don't cut anybody off. Be very, very careful out there driving as you're listening to this podcast. But tonight we're going to open the show with an email I received about last week's show. This is an email response from last week's show on trust relationships. Now, this is from Martin. And if you don't remember Martin, Martin is the gentleman who is on Geeksters. And he is one of three Geeksters. And that's the show that interviewed me a few weeks ago. And I still appreciate that. It was a great interview. If you have a podcast, you're looking for somebody to interview, hey, I'm usually available if you want to sit by and talk. But as Martin will tell you, that I'm an awful long-winded talker. So hopefully your show is long enough and we can talk out some stuff there. Okay, so here's Martin's email. Let's get started with this. I wanted to talk about something you said on the show, not necessarily relating to trust domains. Please know that I'm not trying to nitpick or be judgmental, just how and why I do something different. And folks, that's okay. You don't have to apologize to me. First of all, I do these shows to pay it forward. And if you can help me to help myself, by all means, send those emails in. If I say something out of the ordinary, you're like, whoa, Jack, you're way off base, send it in. I'll put it on the show and we'll make a correction. But this is just how another technologist gets to the same solution that I got you to last week. And he just has his own way of doing things. This is from Martin, who owns his own, by the way, his own consulting business. And he's very successful. He has many clients. And, you know, it's great. I wish I could be like this guy. I wish I could do this stuff. And I don't know, the competition where I live in Pennsylvania is just so tight. Every other shop you go to, it's a Starbucks and it's a computer shop. Starbucks, computer shop, you know what I mean. All right, so let's talk about this. For the same reason, I will also use dogdays.com. Remember, that was my domain name I used last week, dogdays.com and catdays.com. That was the two we joined together. You said that your preference is to name a domain the same name as their web address. And yes, their web address or their registered domain name. That's exactly what I said. As opposed to dogdays.local. I see your reasoning behind this as it creates consistency. And I do like consistency, especially on my web server. Makes life a lot easier. If I remember correctly, this is called a split zone. You talked about needing to add an A record in the DNS to point to the external website of dogdays.com and possibly a registry entry as well. I don't remember Martin talking about a registry entry. I don't really make registry entries, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's go. This way, request to the URL, dogdays.com, will pass through externally and not to the domain looking for a local web server. Would this not be easier just to create a domain, dogdays.local, to eliminate the steps of the A record and or the registry entry? If the domain host moves, you will need to go back to the DNS and make the changes. To me, it seems more like more work just for Aztec reasons. And, you know, that's a tough word. Just for actually pleasing reasons to for the viewing. And you're right. Well, we as system administrators need to know the FQDN. The clients don't. And they would only see the name of Dog Days as a domain name. Just wanted to toss this your way and see what you think. Great show. Keep it up. Martin, I do truly appreciate your efforts in sending me this email. Now, I'm going to read you my reasoning, my response here, because I typed this up in the show notes a little bit earlier. I feel that Martin has a valid reason for using the .local. And in our network, we still use the first part of the domain name when we connect the domain controller to the AD. So in other words, we don't have to type dogdays.com. We just type dogdays because, you know, that's just the name of the domain and it just goes straight through. That's just the way it simply works. We can actually delete the .com part of it. I normally update two different DNS servers. First is an outside DNS server, such as GoDaddy, where you can have your a DNS hosted with your domain name. And what I do there is I have an outside IP address, and I have that NATed statically into my local address. Does that make sense? So let's say we have a 72.335.whatever outside address. We NAT that, or we static it. I should say we static the address through the firewall, and we point it directly to our internal address of 192.168, let's say 1.10, whatever that server is, that NIC is, or whatever that's set up on for that web server. And this way, if you're at home or if you're in the world, you can type, you know, dogdays.com. Boom, you're going to come right in. And the reasoning for me doing it this way is my users, so many companies I go into and so many clients I have, when you're working with them, they might have an intranet site, let's say. And that intranet site, they have to go to dogdays.com for their work. Maybe they have, I don't know, a file share or something on there that they use. Or I don't know what they're doing with it. But anyway, they're going to go to that web address. I'm kind of in the education realm, so ours is like the grade book. And ours is, you know, different things like that, that we host locally, but the users have to get it from home as well as locally. And my users aren't going to know. You know, when you type an address in the address bar, you'll never type in dogdays.local. They wouldn't do that. It's about as easy as telling somebody my web address is .net. They're like, dot what? Everything's .com in the world today. So you give them your fully qualified domain name. And the reason I do this is so many businesses I walk into say, well, our users go to http://192.168.9.10/home/index.html, and it's like, and then they go home and they type it in 192. No page found, because they're at home. And so I do it for the consistency reasons, Martin, is why I do this. And it's very consistent for my users just to type in dogdays.com at work. And I use my internal DNS on my Active Directory server, and I point it to the local address. So when it hits that server first, it finds the page, it resolves it, it knows not to go out on the internet. Some people make the mistake of only registering their outside address. So here's what happens in your network. All your traffic has to leave your firewall, leave your router, go out on the internet into the World Wide Web, make its way around the World Wide Web, around, you know, 5 to 10 billion routers, work its way back, come back into your same network through your same firewall, to get to that server. So this makes it really, really fast, and I do it for consistency is why I do that. Now, servers, as with all things in the computer field, allow us to configure our domains based on our best past practices. So Martin, if you've always used .local and you know that's good for you and it works, then continue to do that. That's how you do it, and that's fine. These shows that I work on each week and these topics I try to bring to everybody is very much as simplistic as I can make it. Remember, I live by that the KISS rule because I spent time in the military. Keep it simple, stupid. That's what they told us in the military. Don't overthink it. Don't overstep your bounds. And at the same time, every way is right. You know, with a computer, look how many times you sit down and you tell somebody maybe you want to create a folder on a desktop. Maybe I would right-click and say new folder. Maybe you would go a totally different route to create that new folder in your desktop. Maybe you'd create it in the file folder and drag it out. I've seen people do that. So there's a million ways to do the right thing, and whatever way you do it is the way it should be. So, Martin, you do bring up very, very valid points, and I do appreciate your feedback, and I hope you keep giving me feedback because I know you're a very talented man in this field, and your responses mean a lot to me. So, but that's the way I do it my way, and I understand why you're doing it your way. So it makes a lot of sense. The registry entry thing, I don't remember what we were talking about there. I'd have to go back and listen to the show myself, unfortunately. but I don't remember talking about making a registry entry for a domain name issue. I don't know. So anyway, I do appreciate the feedback. And, you know, perfect. Thank you so much. I hope others out there send me feedback. Tonight we're going to be talking, as I said, about some key concepts. Key concepts of networking, because here's what I believe. This is why I started into this advanced networking course that I'm actually taking online. And you know I offer my own server courses. But you can always learn more. And I'm trying to wrap my head around the VLAN technology, layer 2 and layer 3 switching, and routing. I mean, I want to get even better at those ideas because with a network the size of ours, I mean, we have, you know, now we're running almost 1,000 nodes on our network. It's unbelievable, and it's going to be very hard to tame that. So now I got to break it down in pieces, and I got to retame that network. And the only way I can think to do that is, and a lot of you are going to cringe out there because we have no VLANs running. No, wait, I'm lying. Actually, the honest truth is we do have VLAN 1. And if you're familiar with VLANs, you understand that that's the default VLAN that everything runs through. And at times, the network gets a little sluggish. You can understand why. And as I rebuild this network and rebuild my VLANs and get people in the proper way, I mean, I already drew it out. I got the map all done and everything. So once I get that all set up, I'm sure I'll talk more about that later on. But we're going to talk about some key concepts of networking right now. First, we're going to revisit what a network is, how it operates. So first, let's define a computer network. It transmits data between computers and other network devices, such as printers and more, obviously, as you know. A network. Now, these are just straight terminology. Network. The physical infrastructure that enables the transmission of data. It consists of all sorts of physical devices such as cables, switches, routers, fiber optics, microwave dishes, and so on. I'm going to tell you an interesting story before we move on with networking and network cables. I had some interns once. I had them going up and down the ladders. They were stringing some network cables. They were running some Cat 6 enhanced cable through our school. And I went upstairs, and, you know, I like to listen to the interns. I don't like to approach them all the time, so I like to just listen in, eavesdrop, if you will. And I was listening to the interns, and what they told me, or what I heard them saying was, I can't believe Jack's making us do this. I didn't go to school to run cables. I'm not a cable dog. I'm a computer technologist. I don't understand why he makes us run this. I turned that corner and the color just left their faces because they're like, oh my God, I wonder if he heard me. And I said, let me tell you something, young man. I don't know what they taught you in your schooling, in your coursework, but the only way that I know to connect two computers together or a computer to my server bank or, you know, a computer to a network printer is by way of some kind of cable. And they were actually putting in wireless devices. So what about the wireless? I said, well, let me tell you something. You can't ordinarily. Now, there is devices out there that you can do because you can have a mesh network. But I said, you can't hang an access point without putting a cable into it and plugging it into a switch. Okay, that's just the way it works. And then the units, the wireless units hit that point. They have to have somewhere to go. So they go back to that cable. I'm explaining this to two guys that just completed their college coursework. And it was a technical school. Kind of threw me off. But why do we got to run cable? You got to learn that. It's very important. Okay, let's talk networking. The preparation of data for transmission. And the act of subnetting that data onto the physical network for transmission. Now, networking includes the establishment of communications between nodes. Nodes are, we know, devices. To transport data across the physical network, networking is enabled by software, such as various components in Windows that enable data communications between devices, as well as software on the routers that directs data towards its destination. Now, these destinations are not straight, nor is it the division between them absolute. However, understanding how they differ helps the understanding the context of the discussion, and that context is often half the battle towards understanding the concept, using the difference between the two terms of a guide, not a rule. Now, I'm going to go down a little bit because we're going to talk a little bit about a couple different types of connections. And you folks, you may have heard these connections and you may not. The first connection is Cat5, Cat5 networking cable. But there's other types of connections that you may use, you may not, you may run into in the field. And I mean, today, whatever I run today is Cat6e, Cat6 enhanced cable. Any other reason, because it's Cat6 enhanced, they say it's better, right? We know that it's maybe more distance, it's got better shielding, but anything that's going to make that signal more reliable, I'm going to use that cable. Because why would I hang Cat5 because I said I saved $10 from a box of cable? It's probably not worth it. You're better off to go spend the money, get the good cable, and put it in and never have to worry about it. Remember, we do things, I talked to you a few shows ago, we do things so we don't lose sleep at night. We don't want to lay awake at night saying, man, I hope that hospital network is running okay. I hope. We don't want to lose sleep. We want to know that we put the network in and it's running top notch. Now, there's also something called the token ring, FDDI, and ATM. Now, even if you don't use those today, you may run across those at some point. You should at least be familiar with the terminology. You should also be familiar with the concept of backbones, which are high bandwidth network segments used to connect or aggregate various regions of a network. You can easily compare a network backbone to a freeway. A freeway is for high capacity road used to connect and aggregate various regions of the city, state, and county. Freeway systems are great for comparing networks. You can equate vehicles on the freeway to packets on the network. And roads and freeway systems are like various network segments on your LAN. Now think about this. So, I was explaining this to my wife the other night when we were talking, because you know she's not in the technology field, as many of your spouses may not be. But, you know, a good spouse, I guess, is a listener, and she will listen to me rattle on for quite a while. And we were sitting having dinner, and I was talking to her about, you know, VLANing my network. And I was explaining to her about, you know, we have tunnels going into our city, and it's two lanes. And I said that two lanes of tunnel is called the bottleneck, because we have eight lanes merging into two, and the traffic in the morning during rush hour usually backs up easily 10 miles. And you have to sit bumper-to-bumper traffic as everybody's merging in. I said, this is the same thing that's happening to my network. Everybody's hitting my firewall. So all these different connections, all these different Cat5 connections, my fiber lines, everything's running together. They all hit one point of that switch. They go through, you know, one patch cable, up the cable. They go into the firewall, out of the router, and they make their way out onto the network. There could be a bottleneck, right? Because we're jamming everything, all those lanes into one place, and we're pushing that out through that one wire. So it goes to reason, as you get more and more traffic, you get slower and slower speeds, right? Isn't that what happened with Comcast cable when they started going into neighborhoods and people said, oh no, get DSL, because DSL, everybody gets the same bandwidth. With cable, they said they put in one cable box in your neighborhood, and it shared, almost like the old hubs. It shared across everybody. So if your neighbor's playing, Call of Duty on the Xbox, they might be using more data, and all of a sudden your YouTube videos slow down. It's a little far-fetched in today with as much bandwidth as they're pushing out, but that's kind of the realistic part of it. Now, you should also have a reasonable understanding of remote access and WANs. Let me back this up first. Let's go back first. Another concept to be familiar with is the use of a subnet, often referred to as a segment. The terms subnet and segment are often interchangeable. The network segment is a local, logical region of a LAN. A network segment also has a special meaning in the TCP/IP network. Think of a network segment as a local neighborhood connected to other neighbors, segments. And the rest of the city is the LAN, and then the intersections or on-ramps are the routers. Now, folks, I don't know what size networks you deal with out there. I know we all come from different walks of life, and we all come from different parts of the server and the networking community. Some of you may be lucky enough to sit in an office where you're managing 15 computers and one server. Bless you, because that's a wonderful job. Some of you might be housing something like we're housing, 1,000 nodes. We just put a new 14 access points in, so we're running 28 wireless access points. And, you know, we're supplying right now 8 virtual servers doing their various tasks through the day. And you want to segment out your IP pool. You want to create subnets off of that. You don't want all that traffic combined together. When I first started, it was a Class A network. Everybody got an address. Everybody jumped on the super network highway. And at times, there were some major collisions that happened, as you can imagine. And some major headaches for me and a lot of lost sleep until I started rebuilding the network. You know, now we built that. We built that backbone. We built that what did it say here? The terminology of the backbone, the high bandwidth network segment. I went, and it's not even high enough now, because I went to a class recently. I went to a conference, and the bandwidth on fiber, folks, if you buy a fiber switch, buy one that's going to take up to a 10 gig GBIC. Make sure, you know, that the little modules that go in that you plug your fiber into, make sure that those go to 10 gigabytes. I mean, at least 5. Right now, we're running 1 on every one. So, you know, that's a gigabit. It's a gigabit network. It's clean because it's fiber, and I know the signal is getting there and it's strong. But, you know, I'd like to take those up to 5 gig per switch. Now, when you do that, be careful. We talked before. Remember building the back end when you build the front end. Be careful when you're building that high bandwidth out there in your closets. Don't have it go back to a 1 gigabyte switch in your closet, right? Because now you just killed the whole concept. You're going from 5 to 1. It's not meaning anything. They're not even going to sync at 5. They're going to sync at 1. They're going to take the lowest bandwidth. Make sure you have 5 in the closet, 5 in your server rack. Tie them all together, and you're going to have that super high bandwidth network that you're looking for. Super clean. Now, we talked about the LAN region. You should also be reasonably understanding of remote access and WANs. We talked about WANs, right? Wide area networks. We talked about connecting two physical locations together through a wide area network. It used to be, at one time, this will show my age, we used to purchase what was called frame relay lines, and we would buy those from Verizon. Verizon would put those in, and we would put our signal over that frame relay line, and we would tie two buildings together and provide networking connectivity through our WAN. It was wonderful. I can have my servers at my location and have my workers at a location, you know, wherever they may be, and they're coming across that wire, which is wonderful. Today, it's a little different because, right, we got these very fast links called the internet. You set up your WAN across that, set up a VPN connection to secure the WAN up, and just link them that way through whatever internet connection you have. It's so much easier today than those old frame relays were. They were steady. I mean, they worked, and they never let us down. Remote access is the connection of a single computer to a remote network. One example of remote access connection is connecting to the internet through an old-fashioned traditional modem. Everybody remember those? Remember the squealing? I used to sell dial-up internet, and I used to go to people's house and set those up, and they're like, oh, that squealing is awful. I just turned the volume down on there. Remember the old 3-com modems? I just turned the volume down on them, and they were happy. And that's what we sold, 56-kilobit modems. We had a 56-kilobit digital server in our rack, and we had those connected to PRI lines. And the PRI lines, I believe, if I'm thinking right, allowed for 24 dial-up connections per 56K card. So we didn't need all the phone lines we used to have when we first provided dial-up services to our customers. We had that digital rack, and we had, I think when we sold the business, we had 6 of those cards. So 6 times 24, you do the math. Our goal was five users per every phone line. So we didn't really have busy signals. It worked out really, really well. It was like going to Vegas. It's a gamble, you know, but it worked out good. Nobody ever complained. Another example of remote access connection is connecting to a distant private network through a VPN, the VPN connection. We just talked about that, right? Connecting with a VPN. Now, the WAN abbreviation for wide area network, two or more geographical distant network connected by a WAN link. A LAN, abbreviated by local area network, is generally housed in one building or on one site, such as a campus or a collection of buildings, such as when you work for a college. All the buildings may not have the same address, but they're all right around each other, so you can probably run underground fiber, or maybe you're going to run fiber, you know, across the telephone poles or whatever you have available to you, and you're going to tie all those buildings together. In essence, you would still have a LAN, right? It's not a geographical distant network because it's right on the same campus. People often get confused about the difference between a LAN and a WAN. But I don't understand why. That's the concept. If it's local to you and you can tie it all together with your switches to your fiber, then I would consider that a LAN. If you need a router and you're going to route it together and tie it together or use a VPN link, then you're looking more for a WAN. So LAN is local, WAN. I don't know how that can get confused. Okay, let's go down here, check my time here, and we're going to talk just a little bit here about some key terminology. And this is really good terminology because when I started studying this, I said, look, this is how it works. And I was telling the guy I have working with me right now, we were talking the other morning, and I said, look, we know when we plug a computer, when we plug a Cat 5 or Cat 6 cable into the back of that computer, that, you know, the NIC lights up, and we start sending data. We know that data is going out on the wire and it's doing its thing. You don't know the concept behind that data, right? Do you know how it breaks up the packets? Do you know how it puts the packets back together? Do you know about the headers? Do you know about how it strips the headers from layer 3 to layer 2? The concepts are, it just blows your mind. That's what advanced networking classes give you. It gives you that mind-blowing experience. I think that's what we wanted, right? It makes you a well-rounded technologist. All these classes you can take, right? Even when you take my server classes, it's just making you more well-rounded in the field. Okay, the packet, the unit of data that gets transmitted across the network. Packets are a lot like, I get this, this is a great way of looking at this. Packets are a lot like packages we send through shipping companies. Each network type, such as Ethernet or token ring, places limits on the size of the packets that can be transmitted. They are also similar to sending a package across the country. You can send packages only up to a certain size through regular mail, and you can send other packages through private companies, you know, such as UPS and FedEx, and they can ship different size containers. The package sent through commercial ground freight can be much larger than it can the actual United States Postal Service. Network packages are similar to ship packages in other ways also. If you send a coffee mug through the mail, you wrap it up in layers to ensure that it reaches the destination intact. You might surround it with newspapers, maybe some bubble wrap. You put it in a box, tape the box closed, address the box, place postage on it, and send it on its way. Packets are wrapped in layers as well, and those layers provide addressing, contents, information, and security measures to protect the data payload. All right, that's exactly what it does. It protects the data payload. And one day further down the road, I may give you this, but I'm going to give it to you now. If you have a router, okay, let's take a scenario question here. We have a router set up, and that router is shipping packets out like it should. And the packets are, just trying to consult my notes here to give you the exact size. Let's say the packets are roughly 1,500 bytes. Okay, that's the packet that's going to send is 1,500 bytes. Now, if you send a video file, you send that video file, which is, I don't know, how big can a video file be? 2 gig? It breaks that down by 1,500 packets, and it sends those out. It recompresses those and recompiles them on the other side of the line, and that happens so fast we don't even realize it's going on. Now, what takes more processing unit on the router to send a 2 gigabyte video file, or would it be to send, let's say, 50 documents that are 50 kilobytes each? What would take more processing power? And that answer blew my mind. And I have to remember here, and I'll give it to you here at the end. So you think about this. What takes more? 2 gigabyte video or 50 or even 25, 50 kilobyte text files, you know, documents. We'll talk about that in a minute. All right, Cat 5 cable, the most common type of network cable, the cable of choice for Ethernet networks, most installed today is either Cat 5 Enhanced or Cat 6, which is an extended version of Cat 5 that incorporates additional shielding. Remember, we talked about that a little while ago. Cat 6 Enhanced or Cat 6 has additional shielding and better transmission rates, so why not use it? Now, there's also, and I didn't know this until I took the course, there's also 7 and 7E. My suppliers never told me about 7 and 7E, so we've never used it. I can't tell you one way or the other. We use Cat 6 Enhanced. Cat 5 Enhanced consists of unshielded twisted pair of wires. There are 4 pairs of wires in a Cat 5E cable, each of which is similar to a telephone wire. Cat 5E is considered an unshielded twisted pair, UTP. There are many different types of network cables. Some look like television cable. Some are even thicker than that. And some have fewer than 4 pairs found in Cat 5E. Such cabling information is patented. And if you want to take a certification course on cabling, and the vast majority of installations have either Cat 5E, or we'll install Cat 5E or Cat 6 in future developments. So that is the basis of networking cable, okay? Now, I told you guys a few weeks ago or maybe a month ago or so on the show, I don't know, because when I get interns in the interview, my job sitting on the board of the college is to drill these guys and see what do they know. Right, they're finished with their college. They got their 2 years of college finished in their technical college, and it's my job sitting on the board to go back to the board and say, "Wow, these guys are prepared for the future in technology." Or, you know, you guys stink, and you haven't prepared these people properly, which I've told them at different times. I say, you know, we talked about what's the difference between a hub and a switch, and I told you folks. One guy told me one has more prettier lights than the other one. I guess that's correct. One told me one is more expensive than the other. Again, that is correct. But the true meaning of is if you're building a network and you're hanging a hub, I don't know. Get out of the business. Run. Quit doing this business. There's no we don't even buy hubs anymore. If we even have to split a network, sometimes we'll go in a room and have to split the network down a little bit. We will buy a 5-port switch. They're so inexpensive. And I know, you know, that the technology is in there to give each port the same bandwidth across all the ports. I'm not dividing it up amongst everything like we talked about the old cable company used to do. So, you know, hubs, you don't really want to do it because they share the bandwidth amongst all the devices. So we really don't want to do that. Therefore, and here's a simple way of doing this, and I did the math. I don't have my phone with me here. I do have my phone with me here, and I'm going to do this math for you right now because I think it's really crazy. So if I have 100 divided by 24, I think that's right. Yep. So if I have 100 megabytes per second feeding my hub, and I have 24 users plugged into that hub, each user is getting 4.16 megabytes per connection. 4.16. For as cheap as it is, folks, put a switch in, because we know a switch, if we put a gigabyte switch in, or even a 100 meg switch, you feed it with 100 megs, the circuitry in there allows each port to have 100 megs. Hence, that's why there's more pretty lights. That's why it's a little bit more expensive. And that's why it simply works better, right? Anyway. Now, so that's the difference between a switch and a hub, just so you know. Routers are network devices that direct packets through a LAN. Routers are like traffic police and tour guides wrapped into one network. A router examines the destination address of the packet, and it forwards the packet on through the network towards its destination. Now, I do have a little bit of a problem with it being saying network devices are that direct packets through a LAN. I primarily use routers through a WAN, a wide area network. I don't normally run them through the local area network. So, anyway. All right. So we are going to leave the rest of this for next week's show. We're going to be talking more on networking, networking terminology, and all this great jazz out there. I don't want to fill your head with too much because you're going to run away and say, Jack, geez, you're talking over our head. But I did get an email that said, Jack, how come you never go over any concepts? How come you never talk about, you know, basic stuff? You talk about DNS, DHCP, the servers, Active Directory. Oh, my God. You know, I want to learn some of the basics. So this was a basic night. We talked about some terminology. Had that great email. It was always good, a great email there from Martin. The answer to the question, if you were still pondering that question, is this. It takes more processing power on your router to process those 50 Word documents at 50 kilobytes a piece than it would be for that 2 gigabyte. Because the 2 gigabyte, it breaks it down, and whatever you take that 1500 kilobytes and break that packet down, it would send less packets. That's the whole idea. So sending multiple little packets makes more work on the processor itself. So that's why it takes more out of it. So I hope that hope you understand that part of it. Please remember, folks, share your love out there when you're buying from Amazon. Use my Amazon link on my website, tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Click on the link for Amazon. Please deactivate your ad blocker when you're doing so. Also, don't forget, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, or VMware ESXi Server from install to administration, please sign up for one of my online courses. Many of you have, and I truly appreciate that. I'm getting great positive feedback. Thank you so much for all the positive feedback from the courses, and I'm glad it's helping everybody out there that is taking those. Once again, it is tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Look at the online class link at the top of the page. Click on that. Courses are self-paced. You watch a video and you take a quiz. Once you complete the course, I will mail you a certificate in the mail suitable for framing or getting that job that you're trying to get and you want to beat out the other people. You'll say, hey, look, I recently had a server class right here. I have a server class. I got certified that I actually completed the course, and they're going to be more impressed with that. Once again, sign up for that course at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Folks, I hope you have a great work week, and I hope everybody will be back here next Tuesday night. If you've never caught a live show, you can catch me on Spreaker or go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Click on the live radio link at the top. It's 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Tuesday night, I'm here. Casting out there to the friends to share some of my server knowledge and networking love with all of you folks out there. Take care, my friends. I'll see you back here next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.